Tonight, game one in Toronto. The Raptors taking on the Miami Heat. All sorts of storylines heading into this one on and off the court as Jim Taddy from TSN 1050 joins us. Jim, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, my man?
Very good, Jason. Thanks very much. How are you today?
Well, I'm good. Your city signed a huge relief, I'm guessing, for the Raptors to get out of the first round for the first time since 2001.
I got to tell you, first of all, there could be some music in the background, and there it is. I'm at the ACC now getting set for our pregame show. The city is reeling, winning the draft lottery and advancing to the second round of any playoff series in any league. The city is reeling, Jason. Nobody knows what to do.
Well, yeah, exactly. They've had a lot of success, so maybe it'll continue. What about the Raptor players? Do you get a sense that there's relief and that maybe, you know, they won't come in as tight as they looked at times in that series against Indiana?
You know, it's really hard to say. It's not. I think we tend to look at this with hockey eyes. You know, in the best of 4-7 box, as I call it, you look for little momentum swings. In that series against the Pacers, there were no momentum swings. They were dreadful for performances in Game 4 and Game 6. And, I mean, even the fourth quarter in Game 7 wasn't one for the ages. So I guess maybe the lesson that they've learned is just keep playing, just keep working through it and find other ways. That would be one of the descriptives for the Raptors this season, would be due to injury and due to emergence of people like Norman Powell, they did find different ways. So that's, you know, if I had to say what's the ultimate attribute or positive for this team, I would say that they always found a different way. Now, they got through that seven-game series with an all-star backcourt that didn't really look like one. So I don't know where this goes.
The other interesting storyline in this series really doesn't involve the two teams playing tonight anyway, but it's Chris Bosh and, you know, the mess between him and the Heat. He really feels he's ready to play, and the Heat are like, no. And I wonder if there's some legalities here. The Heat want to protect themselves somewhat. How much of a storyline is that, do you feel, in this series?
Well, I think it's one that's going to build. He's apparently, from what I've heard, not in Toronto today. So but there is talk that he will appear at some point in the series. I guess the problem would be, well, there's a couple of problems. First is the medical one. Reoccurring blood clots is not something that is like any other injury. I mean, we've seen that in hockey with reoccurring blood clots. That's not good for anybody, regardless of what you're doing. Having said that, you know, the team adjusted after the All-Star break, and oddly enough, it was here at the All-Star break where he was all ready to go and then had the problem and had to bail out. The team went small and developed a new look without him and has done very well. So, you know, you never want to say that about somebody. Oh, he's healthy, darn. I mean, you know, if he's healthy, he's healthy. And it's a nice ad. I just don't know how this plays out just because, you know, it's not a regular injury. It is a health problem.
Well, and that's what's so unique about it, right? And players, we all know the competitiveness from professional athletes. They all feel they're healthy. They're like, no, I'm good to play. And I know that, you know, they get a different opinion and some doctor and away you go. So there's a lot of stuff at stake here. Do you think, talking to guys who cover that team, do you think we'll see Bosch in this series? Is that a realistic chance or none at all?
I wouldn't say none at all. I never like to say that. From what I've heard from various sources, I was listening to Ian Eagle on the Rich Eisen show today, and he was talking about that. He's calling the game tonight, and he suggested there's a pretty real chance that at some point he appears. I mean, you can't look at it as a problem. The guy's a stud basketball player and would obviously add to the lineup, but it does change the look. Now, if we're talking about him appearing in games 3 or games 4, who knows where we are there anyway? So maybe they need him. There's no way to know. It's kind of an unknown situation, but certainly an intriguing storyline that's sort of simmering underneath the surface.
Jim Taddy from TSN 1050 in Vancouver, in Toronto, joins us. Raptors and the Heat. Game one goes tonight. Of course, you can watch that game on TSN, and we'll have live coverage here of games two on the radio on Thursday night when they host the Heat. Now, Jim, looking at the matchups on the floor, there's a little bit of a unique storyline. The point guards used to be teammates fighting for floor time when they were members of the Houston Rockets, and that led to a confrontation with Kyle Lowry and his head coach. Then Kevin McHale, he ended up getting traded to Toronto, and here we are now 4 years later, and you know he's a two-time All-Star. But how do you look at that matchup? Who do you give the advantage to at the point guard position?
Well, you know, I think the concern in Toronto is, when are these guys going to be the all-stars that they were during the regular season? With Kyle Lowry, there's two storylines. There's the elbow problem, and you don't know exactly how that's impeding his play. And then there is the old story of, you know, when somebody in the league figures out what you're doing and then alters it, it's like somebody publishing a code. So I'm just wondering, if because of how the Pacers altered that backcourt, if the Heat just didn't absolutely figure out they could do the same thing. So Kyle Lowry became a facilitator, and DeMar DeRozan became a volume guy. I mean, he took 32 shots, a Raptors record on Sunday in Game 7. And his game, I mean, he had to do all volume. Otherwise, he was not comfortable. Didn't look good out there. So I'm not really concerned about the matchup from the other side. I'm concerned, if I were a Raptor fan, about these guys returning to the form where they absolutely dazzled everybody in the league.
Well, right now, when they're combining to basically hit one of every three shots, that's not very good for your two all-stars. But DeMar DeRozan did have two 30-point games in that series against the Pacers. So when they did need him, he did find a way to step up in that series. There's no doubt about it. What do you look at him in the matchup against the Heat? Do you feel that maybe like the Pacers' defense at some point should get credit for how they shut those two down specifically? And maybe will the Heat be an easier matchup or even more difficult from an attack standpoint for those two all-stars for the Raptors?
I think everybody's expecting the Heat would be an easier matchup, although I really don't want to say that. You know, it's all about punch-counterpunch, and so if you restrict Lowry or he can't do what he's capable of because of an elbow problem and you're funneling everything to DeMar DeRozan, everybody figures that out in a hurry. What was really effective was when DeMar was struggling and they funneled everything to JV. That was pretty effective. But, you know, you can't go with the same looks all the time. You have to keep changing it. So it's intriguing that way and slightly different from hockey, where in a 4-7 series, it does sort of – there is some momentum, and it does take a little while to break down a team's breakout or something like that. In basketball, it's – I mean, that game on Sunday was almost four games in one.
Well, it was interesting where the Raptors looked like they were coasting to the win, and then suddenly things got really dicey. And I wonder – how, you know, the mental state of this team. We saw Damari Carroll, and I saw his just aggressive, relentless defense that seemed to add a lot just to the mental toughness. Because I think it's fair to say, Jim, in previous years, that had been the question mark of the Raptors. Were they mentally tough enough or even physically tough enough at crunch time? Do you think they answered that question?
Well, I think they did, but I think they learned a big lesson in this past series, because I think they understood finally what it meant to empty the tank. In Game 7, I thought individually, everybody who was on that floor, and it was really an eight-man rotation because T-Ross only played 5 minutes, I thought they all, in their own way, emptied the tank. I guess the question would be, 2 days later, what's left in the tank? And, you know, what are the challenges with another opponent? There's a lot of questions here. There's no question about that. The team look in the first round was nothing compared to the 56-win regular season. So we're all sort of standing back and looking at it and going, okay, so what did you learn? What do you have left? And what can you add? There's a lot of questions here. No question about that.
When you look at the overall teams, the home floor advantage, everything into this experience on the Heat side, who do you like in the series and why?
I'm going to go with the Raptors, but I see another grueling series. You know, they're a pretty good road team, the Raptors. So, and I would have to believe that based on getting through the first round, you know, that first game against Indiana, they had that opening night jitter thing, and hopefully that's gone. I'm just hoping that they didn't empty the tank and there's some room for growth there. There's really no way to know that. But, you know, I did do all their games this year, so I know that they have a lot of versatility. A guy like Norman Powell came out of nowhere and has developed into a stud player. So the one thing about this team I would describe to you is they always found a way. And until they don't, I'll believe they always will. So it's a pretty good ball team.
Well, Jim, one last one on Powell. Not only did he make some clutch shots, like, this was a steal of a trade when you look back on it for the Raptors. They get a first-rounder and Powell, who's now like a starter. And that's rare to find in the second round of the NBA draft, guys who come up and turn out to not only be, you know, just bench guys, but legit players for you. And he's a rookie. And as good as he was shooting the ball at times, I think his defense might be the best part of his game. Did you see that aspect coming, like when you first saw him this year? Was he a guy who just gradually got better, or was he a real surprise here in the last 2 months?
Oh, no, we covered exhibition games, and everybody knew he was ahead of the first-round pick, DeLon Wright. But nobody understood that. He's basically done in 3 months what Terrence Ross couldn't do in 3 or 4 years. He is a catalyst off the bench. He comes in, you watch the kid come in, you know he's going to do something either defensively or offensively. He's very decisive with the ball, cuts to the net, can start a pass play, has great chemistry with Corey Joseph, which is good. No, this is a story that's off the charts. I mean, nobody in the second round in their first year has impact like this guy. Mm-hmm. It's a great story. And he's a 4-year guy from the NCAA, so he's not a kid, but his impact is absolutely startling.
Jim, enjoyed. I'm sure the city will be going nuts, and it will be a different feel watching this round with maybe not as much nervousness from Raptor fans, knowing that they finally got over the hump and are on to the second round.
Jason, what will we do if the Raptors get in the third round? I'm not ready for this.
Well, Jim, I call it a start. I thought for sure, I actually thought Indiana was going to be a tougher matchup than what they'll face in the Heat. I think the Raptors will face Cleveland in the third round.
Oh, no.
It'll be good, man. It'll be fun.
Yeah.